You're listening to the Loyalty Minute, the show that helps you build better customer loyalty and more valuable user engagement with your host, Rob Gallo.
Welcome, loyal listeners, to another episode of the Loyalty Minute. I'm your host, Rob Gallo, and today I'm eager to chat with our special guest, the loyalty manager at the IKEA Memphis, Carol Smith. Welcome to the show, Carol. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So you're in Memphis, and I know previous to the record button being hit, we talked about Elvis, and just give us a quick background on your trek to Memphis and how you got there and what you're doing.
I had initially started with IKEA in 1993 as a sales coworker, and later progressed up in my career to being a sales manager. So I was a sales manager for many, many years in various departments around the IKEA retail stores. So working with customers pretty much came to me easily because I love to talk. I love to talk to people, love to sell, enjoyed making those connections. And I was fortunate to be working for IKEA. They subsidized my bachelor's degree and then later my master's degree.
Nice.
So communications was my field of study. I taught for a while at Kane University in New Jersey. Loved Kane University, still do to this day. And I was a communications teacher there for a brief period of time before an opportunity came up to go into an entirely new market that IKEA had never been in a brand new store, and I jumped at the chance. It was my opportunity to get into marketing, which was an area of interest to me. And being a sales manager, I knew how important it was to make those human connections with people. And you could learn a lot just from conversations, casual conversations on the selling floor with people. We would often make merchandising decisions based on conversations. People would
with inform customers.
Yeah, oh, customers.
Nice.
Yeah, because people would tell you what it is that they were looking for. And if enough people told you what they were looking for, I wanted to make sure that my selling floor reflected that. There were combinations that were handed to us, and we were told, oh, show things this way. But if you had enough people telling you, we're really looking for something different, then it was the moment you take notice, you take action, and make that change happen, and to make that connection and reinforce that connection. So to jump into marketing was a pretty easy transition for me. Mm-hmm. And it all started with just making those personal connections with people and listening to what it was that they really wanted.
That's great. And then, you know, that leads right into what this program is about. It's about loyalty. So building that loyalty starts with the interactions with your customers, I think.
Yeah.
So let's think about, just a case for those that are new to listening to the program, we like to talk in the forms of stories. So, what we're going to do is try and make relevant stories that can relate to loyalty. So let me ask you this first question, Carol, is mm-hmm. what is a brand you as a consumer are loyal to and why? Can you think of a story in particular that would resonate?
There are brands that to this day I still purchase and would never switch no matter what. And most of them are food related. From being a child shopping with my mother and knowing the brands that she gravitated towards and selected, and then going off as an adult and trying to find cheaper versions of those same brands, but always coming back to that one brand because it reminded me of something. Mm. You make that personal connection as a consumer with a product, and you associate a whole host of emotions that go with that brand. And once you've made that emotional connection with that brand, you find it very difficult to sway away from that. I can name the brands that I'm so loyal to. Skippy peanut butter.
There you go.
How silly is that? But Skippy peanut butter, an emotional bond is formed with that. And it's peanut butter sandwiches after school and peanut butter crackers in front of the TV. And that was the peanut butter that always sat on the shelf in my house. Hunt's tomato sauce. My mother cooked Italian. So Hunt's tomato sauce, that was always in our cupboard. And as an adult growing up, you know, I would try to pinch pennies and look for other versions of those brands. Mm-hmm. But the second the flavor hits your tongue, it's not the same emotional bond. And I always went back to those same brands because I had formed that emotional attachment to it. And I think that that's something that we as loyalty managers should really understand, that we form bonds with brands emotionally. They remind us of something, or they conjure up a certain emotion. And we are negligent if we don't understand that and try to make those emotional connections with the brand as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think everything is built on emotion, and then it's backed up by logic and reason. I've heard that once or twice.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, that makes sense. And I mean, you know, I always look at myself as being a common denominator. You know, if I feel this way, I know other people feel this way. So it's a very simple thing. What are the things that I seek out when I go to spend my consumer dollar? And what are the things that I feel good bringing home and having invited into my home at that point? What brands do I feel good about? You know, when you get a little older and you start to do your research, you start to do your reading, and as an educated consumer, you look into the practices of the company and the ethics of the company. And those are things that all inform that emotional bond you have with the brand. So we as companies, we really have to try hard to be as good as possible and as mindful of the consumer and their intelligence as possible.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to damage that emotional brand.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting, too, that in today's world where everything is at your fingertips in terms of research and the ability to look things up instantaneously, how does it really fare when you think about someone that's coming in and seeing your brand for the very first time? So they're a new consumer in that space, and they haven't had the fortune of their parents like yourselves of showing them these brands. These are the brands that we use in the household normally.
Right.
But
right.
So let's turn that into, how do you go about creating that aha moment with a potential customer to become a brand loyalist?
Right.
What's the secret, do you think?
Well, for many years, the secret for us was the brick and mortar store. We offered a shopping experience that wasn't common or typical in the United States. The ability to test, try, handle, touch, feel every product that we had. And in addition, we had a group of selling coworkers who understood how to make these connections with customers, how to strike up those conversations. Coworkers who understood that they were brand ambassadors, no matter where they were in the store, they were brand ambassadors. And now things have shifted a bit away from the brick and mortar experience. So we, through our social media accounts, through our websites, try to replicate that warm feeling that you get when, you know, you were in our brick and mortar stores, just translated to an online platform at this point. Mm. But it's all about appealing to the things that bring us all together. We're a global company, and so we're appealing to markets all over the world. So how do we have one unified message that appeals to markets in, you know, the global arena at this point? So the only thing that we do have is the commonality between all people. What are the things that people have in common? And those are the things that we cling to and emphasize.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I saw an article last month, in fact, about IKEA letting people use time as currency in Dubai.
Yeah.
Okay. So what
isn't
was that
amazing?
Yeah.
There are experiments that are being tried all over the world throughout the company to see what it is that actually, you know, creates the trigger point for the consumer. That was one of them that's been working in Dubai. It's fascinating to think about. But why is it that most of us are shifting over to an online shopping experience? And it's all time and convenience.
Yeah.
So if we can monetize that, I mean, you know, we're really onto something.
Yeah.
But I'm always fascinated by the innovation throughout my organization and the different things that they're trying in different markets.
Yeah. So I think it was, you know, from what I read, it was, if you're going there and then you can show on your Google Maps how far you came, they're going to give you a discount based on that distance because you took the time to actually physically go to the store to see the products and touch the material.
Oh, yeah.
That's a neat concept.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I can liken it to what we're experiencing here in Memphis, because the nearest IKEA to us in any given direction is 5 hours away. So we're the only IKEA store in the Mid-South, and we have customers who drive great distances to come to us.
Hmm.
You know, they'll come from Alabama, they will come from Louisiana, they will come great distances to come shop with us. Even our Nashville customers, that's a 3-hour drive, and we're still attracting them and we're still serving them.
So my experience with IKEA, I didn't mean to cut you off, Carol, but my experience with IKEA up in New York when I lived up there, I don't know if there's one down here, I haven't scoped it out, but when I was in New York, I didn't get that same feel that I got when I went to a normal, what I call a normal furniture store, where I felt pressured. I felt like a guy comes in, he's a hawk, and he's just, you know,
he's on you,
help you with, and he follows you around the store. And I just keep shaking the guy. I don't get that same sense, and I'm assuming that's part of the overall brand's strategy to make it more of a friendly environment.
And always have been, and always has been. When we talk about IKEA and we talk about the innovations that IKEA has you know, unleashed on the consumer, one of them is the concept that you're going to do a little and we're going to do it a little, and together you're going to save and you're going to be able to take your product out, and it's instant gratification. But part of that was the low pressure approach, that IKEA coworkers would be close by if you needed them, but they would let you explore the space all on your own with, you know, with as little or as much assistance as you wanted. It was one of the first things that I encountered when I first shopped at IKEA, and I think it was in 92, I think, when I first encountered an IKEA. And I, you know, going into a furniture store, you hold your breath because you're visualizing five people on you at the same time. And I remember walking the store and seeing coworkers who would acknowledge me, but would not come my way unless I like beckoned them. And then they were right over there. What can we help you with? And it was different, and it still is.
That's good. That's good stuff. So let's turn the tables a little bit. I mean, you know, I know the timing wise before we hit the record button, we were talking about the coronavirus, you know, and it's just the craziest thing that I've ever seen in terms of the social distancing and the whole approach that's happening right now in the world. How is IKEA handling that?
Well, right now, what we are doing is continuing to stay open, but we're closed to the public. So we are open. The coworkers are all here in the building. They're continuing to be productive. We are now servicing customers via click and collect and click and deliver. And you can always order online. IKEA USA is always open for orders. But we're servicing customers in the area via click and collect, which is you shop online, you've got your shopping list, it's paid for, you come to the store, and you can collect it at the store in our loading area. And we have click and deliver as well if you are in a spot where you can't leave your house or you don't want to. These are services that we've always had, but now we're able to serve the many, and you know, business is still going on. It's business as usual.
And any plans for a drive-through?
I would love that. I would actually love that. I'll wear the headset. I'll wear roller skates. I'm good.
I'll take that couch to go. Could you just strap it on the top of my car, please?
Whatever it takes. Literally, whatever it takes. To stay in business? Yeah, absolutely. Whatever it takes.
Well, that's good. Again, I think, you know, from all the research that I do on a regular basis about customer loyalty, I think companies that are showing that sort of initiative for the public good, right, get higher marks in their loyalty rankings from particularly the millennials. I think they're thinking that if they have a good social conscience, it's a better company to do business with, which is great. So let me ask you, does IKEA have a loyalty program per se? I earn points for every purchase that I make. How does that work?
So we offer IKEA Family, and after IKEA Family is a discounts and loyalty program. There are products throughout the store every month that are on discount just for IKEA family members. There are perks and benefits to being a family member. You get free coffee in our restaurant while you're shopping. You get birthday meals and coupons, and you're informed first of any kind of events or, you know, cool workshops or stuff that we have going on in the store.
And is it all subscription-based?
Yeah, it's free. You just sign up for it. Yeah, it's free. Totally free. Sign up and, you know, we'll do the rest. And we can inform you as little or as much as you want. You can opt out of emails, but opt into text. You can tailor it to be your experience.
So if I buy bedroom furniture, and then do I earn points that have a redeeming value later on?
No, we don't do a point system. But you as a family member will have insight into what is on sale for family members. You know, you can opt in for a regular email or check back on our website to see what is on discount. You also have 90-day price protection. So if something drops in price within 90 days after purchasing, you come back and get the difference, no problem at all.
Now, that's another good question. I'm assuming that the majority of the stuff that's for sale there is exclusive to IKEA.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is.
But do you have regular brands of everyday items?
Define everyday item, because I think we pretty much got it covered. But
well, no, what I mean is other brands that are for sale in other stores.
No, all of IKEA products are proprietary to IKEA, and we don't sell anybody else's products other than our own.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So let me ask you this then. In an ideal world, right, what would customer loyalty engagement strategies look like in the future if you could tell a futuristic story?
Well, I mean, in the future, I'm predicting even more precise micro-targeting with regard to marketing. I'm predicting that I'll be able to open my laptop and I will get the ads for the products that I want. Now, what that means with regard to my privacy, I don't know.
Are you reading your mind? Is that what you're saying, Kyle?
Literally reading my mind. I literally want to think about a shampoo or see an ad for a shampoo and go, oh, I want that. And immediately a discounted offering is going to pop up on my screen that this computer will read my thoughts and know exactly what I want and anticipate my future needs. And that would be brilliant. I don't know if I want to live in that world, but if I were, you know, if I were in marketing and, you know, in 2090, that's what I think we'll see.
Yeah. So. It's funny you say that. I watched an interesting show, I think it was on Discovery Channel, about the future of mind reading. And They're trying to map certain regions of the brain that think of certain things. And it gets granular. I mean, with supercomputing and quantum computing, I think anything is possible. But it's, like you said, it's kind of scary in the future.
I think we're in the nascent stages of thought to speech. I mean, I've already seen experiments conducted on that. So I think it's just a matter of microseconds before we are thought to advertising. I mean, we're almost there. So. Yeah.
Well, I remember text-to-speech back in the day. There was an app called Dragon, I think Dragon something. And I remember I probably paid several hundred dollars for it. And I had to train it to talk. So I'd talk to this thing for 25, 35, 40 minutes a day. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Now, you know, Google's almost reading my mind, which is great.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's improved dramatically over the years. So to me, again, that's, I don't want to say, you know, how it dovetails into loyalty. But when I think about a company like Google, I mean, they run my life. They run my calendar. You know, I get an email about a flight that I'm taking last week to Phoenix. It shows up immediately on my itinerary in the calendar, blocks out that date. Ask me if I want to say an out of office experience. I mean, it's great.
Right.
You know, but it gets a little creepy.
It sure does. But, yeah, it absolutely does. Yeah. I was in IT for a brief period of time in my career. And the leaps and bounds since when I was in IT are just astounding. And it's not going to stop. Innovation is just going to continue. And, you know, my mechanized house at this point, my app-driven house at this point is it's beyond our, we can't even predict what's about to happen next, but it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens with this whole virus thing. I mean, I know we're on kind of quarantine for the last couple of days, and it's going to be into the foreseeable future, which is, you know, again, obviously it's hampering business in every capacity, but when people do come back,
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Probably an important announcement.
Well, food is important.
If it's a lunch order, then yeah, it's important. But I think over the next several weeks, I think it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out with major brands that have the fortitude to last for several weeks or a month or whatever it takes to get back on track is going to be, they'll be fine. But there's going to be small to mid-sized companies that are living, you know, hand to mouth. It's going to be a little bit tough. So
yeah, and my heart goes out to those coworkers. I've been in communication with a few of my friends. Oh, right now their future is just totally uncertain. They're working for smaller businesses, and their future is uncertain. And I'm just, you know, beside myself with worry over my friends. My son is working for a small business and he's concerned about his future. So it's going to be turbulent for a while. I mean, I really visualize that. But we're going to continue on our end to be optimistic, and we're going to continue to do what it is that we do, which of course is, you know, when we think about it, it might be even more important what it is that we're doing, because I think people will turn to how comfortable their homes are. If this is going to be a new normal for a period of time, then maybe there are ways that people will, you know, turn towards what can we do to make our homes as nice, as comfortable, as inviting, as entertaining as possible. So there might be opportunities in the future, we don't know, for businesses that turn towards that or look towards that. Mm. For the smaller businesses, I'm sick with worry. I'm open about it.
I think, for myself, I know personally, and I'm hoping our listeners will take it upon themselves to help small local businesses and frequent them as often as possible, because they really are the backbone of this country when you really think about it.
Absolutely.
You know, just a little strip mall down the road, you don't think much of it. Every one of them has a pizza place, but right now they're not making any pizzas. Although, right, that's not true. Some of them are delivering.
Yeah, here in Memphis, we have tons of small business. There is just so many, you know, from hospitality to food to crafts to art to you name it. And Memphis has a small business for it. And we've got a really, it worries me that, you know, that some of them may not survive this. And we're just keeping our fingers crossed for the future.
Yeah, well, let's hope it's over real quick. So let me ask you this. Finally, we're going to wrap this up with this. What sort of actionable advice, Carol, could you share with our listeners that they can implement today to help them attract and retain more customers?
Talk to your customers.
Love
physically,
it.
One-on-one, talk with your customers. Analytics are great. Demographics are great. That's all fantastic, but every bit of it is on paper. Get out there and speak to the people. Look and watch how they're shopping. You know, I remember I was in the Northeast. I come from the New Jersey store, and we had a demographic shift that happened almost overnight. And I was a sales manager at the time, and I was looking at this demographic shift with my own eyes, and doing deliveries and arranging deliveries for certain areas that had not had deliveries. And there appeared to be a population explosion happening in a certain area and a certain demographic shift. And I remember approaching marketing and saying, what are we doing about this demographic shift? And they replied at the time that they didn't see it. They didn't see it because they were a year behind as far as demographic collection was going, demographic data collection was going. So they weren't there on the selling floor actually physically talking to people. Talk to your customers, talk to anybody that you want to engage with your brand. You know, it's boots on the ground right now, and we're all fighting for every dollar. You can't afford to let these opportunities pass you by. Talk to your customers. That's the best possible advice that I could give just about anybody at this point.
Yeah, and to follow up with that is when they talk, listen. Like
yes.
You said earlier on the top of the show, when you're listening to your customers, they're going to tell you what they want. And, you know, sometimes you can't give them everything they want all the time, but, you know, you do your best at least to understand what they're looking for.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Watch how they shop. You know, it's not just that conversation. The conversation is important. Watch how they shop. Watch what they touch. Watch what they pass by. You know, stay fluid all the time. Rearrange your merchandising. You know, keep on top of what it is that they're doing when they're physically in your business. You know, yeah, you can't get it from sitting behind a desk. You've got to be out there.
Yep. And nowadays, when they do touch something, you got to wipe it down with Lysol. All right, Carol, I wanted to thank you for your time and sharing your customer loyalty insights. I do appreciate you coming in and taking your time and sharing it with our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me.
If customers wanted to get a hold of you directly just for some follow-up, how would they be best about going to do that?
LinkedIn is great. They can also reach out through our Memphis, IKEA Memphis.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, I wanted to thank you, loyal listeners, for investing some of your valuable time with us. If you received some value from the show, we would definitely appreciate a 5-star review on your favorite podcast streaming service. If you know someone who might find value in listening to the podcast, please do share. That's how we get the word out. To reference this and other Loyalty Minute episodes, please visit theloyaltyminute.com. Enjoy.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for your next edition of the Loyalty Minute.